Welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay. On today's show, contributor Amanda Moore interviews Yasmin Ango, author of It Ends With Night.
Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Ms. Yasmin Ango. Yasmin Ango is the Anthony-nominated author of the critically acclaimed thrillers Her Name Is Night and They Come at Night of the Nina Knight series. She is a first-generation Ghanaian-American and in 2020 received the Eleanor Taylor Bland Award for Emerging Writers of Color from Sisters in Crime. Yasmin's books were an Amazon Best Book of the Month for mystery, thriller, and suspense, and an editor's pick. Her work has received numerous recognitions, was on a billboard in Times Square, all right, Yasmin, best of list, and a Library Journal starred review. Her Name Is Night has appeared in the New York Times Book Review, OprahDaily.com, Pop Sugar, Nerd Daily, The Washington Independent Review of Books, The Guardian, and other platforms. The Nina Knight series has been optioned for a TV series by Ink Factory in fifth season and is currently in development. Yasmin is a proud member of several prestigious organizations such as Sisters in Crime, Mystery Writers of America, Crime Writers of Color, International Thriller Writers, and the Women's National Book Association. Yasmin's newest book is called It Ends With Night. Yasmin, welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review.
Thank you. Thank you, Amanda, for having me.
Now, I am so excited to read this book. It has a wonderful cover. I love covers. Wonderful cover, a great continuation of the series. And so for those who haven't gotten into the series yet or haven't had a chance to read this book, can you provide them just a little summary about what they can expect to read?
Sure. So the series revolves around Nina Knight. She is an elite Ghanaian assassin for a secret organization called the African Tribal Council, or the Tribe. They are a group of very prominent and wealthy African people from various countries in Africa who have come together to kind of refill all of the depleted resources and things like that that have been taken away, mined and stolen from the people of the African diaspora for centuries. And so they're just trying to like rebuild Africa in that way. And so she is on the team of elite enforcement people, I should say, I guess. They are the dispatch team. So whoever is against what the tribe is trying to do, they decree that they should be taken out. And so Nina heads that group up. And so that's basically what her job is throughout the three books. In It Ends With Night, she's given a little bit of a promotion that she doesn't want. She's never wanted to be in a place of leadership. She likes to be like a cog in the wheel and just to be working as one of the dispatch members. But now she's received this promotion where she is the head of Network, which is the group that kind of leads the dispatch and kind of does all the tech stuff for them and things like that. And so her father also pushes her into more of a political position when she has to go to Tanzania to help be a liaison to some mining reformations that they are the Tanzanian government is trying to create with a village that has found this very rare and pricey or valuable gem. And so they want to be able to mine it, but they want to give the villagers, you know, a fair market value and to make sure that everyone's interests are recognized. And so Nina steps in to try to like negotiate all of that, and it's really not her lane. So she and there's a lot of turmoil and stuff like that, and so she's got to figure that out. And there's some killing and shooting and stuff like that too. So,
well, with this book and with every single one of your books, and I've had the pleasure of reading them all. And with this book, you reveal yet another side to her, and it's really great to see. So the last story ended, and Nina had to protect her adopted father and family and stood up against her dear friend and mentor. Mm-hmm. And I got a chance to see the evolution of her in this book from when you first started the series. So now I'm seeing Nina, the mother figure to Georgia, Nina, the sister to a sister who's great. Ellen, I think I just like to meet her in person.
Me too.
yeah. And Nina, the dutiful daughter, and now Nina, the leader. So can you tell me how you decided to develop her character in this way, in the way you've done in this book?
Yeah. I have really had to think about how she was at the beginning. At the beginning, when we first meet her, she's very broken. And we find out why she's very broken. And she is right at the moment where she meets the people that are going to kind of help her to get her back together again. She's, I don't know if I've ever said that to you, this before to you, but like, she's like a Humpty Dumpty to me. And she's just all like fractured up. And all of these people that she meets, especially the Knights, her adoptive family, they are the ones that begin to kind of put her back together again. And so when we meet her, she's a little bit together, but she's very robotic and she's very automated. She's not allowing herself to feel, and she's very closed off. And so with her relationship with Georgia, with her relationship with Court, Georgia's father, and even her best friend, Kegel, they all kind of help patch her back together. And so we see a little bit of that in each book. And so at the end, I really wanted, you know, she still has those moments like we all do when she feels, you know, imposter syndrome, when she feels very vulnerable and scared, and she's not sure if she, you know, believes this life that she has now. And definitely when she has to be put in this position of leadership, she definitely feels the fear because she never thought that, you know, she never wanted it, but she never thought that she was like good enough for it. And so by now, when we've met her, she's gone through all these things and she really just realizes that, you know, she has to change, not for everyone, but like really for herself, and that she can't remain the same. And if she wants to live and truly live and enjoy life, then she has to keep making those steps forwards and not like looking back and not keeping herself back. So I really wanted to explore that because, you know, that's something that I've dealt with and still deal with. You know, it's always an up and down kind of thing. And I think especially for women of color, you know, we deal with that even more so when we're in spaces that are not normally for us. How do we deal with that? And how do we juggle all of these plates, you know, being moms and sisters and daughters and things like that, and people in the community and all of that. It's a lot. And so I really wanted Nina to kind of come to terms with, okay, this is my life now. How do I go forth with this life that I have right now?
And I'm so glad you mentioned imposter syndrome, because I thought that was fascinating that you put that in the book, that even for a female assassin running a group of people, she is challenged.
Sure.
And she has to take herself to a level of leadership that she didn't have to do before. She just took the orders and did it. And now she's mm-hmm. calling shots and things like that. And so for her type of position, how do you decide what kind of challenges that she would face? And you did some of it with Billy. I think his name is Billy.
Mm-hmm.
Basically questions, you know, something that she's done. And then you wrote the character, you wrote about how she responded to that and what she was. I mean, how did you kind of think through that process of what happens in a person in this position who's struggling a little bit with whether or not she can do this and she's challenged without having to take him out? I mean, you know, she
was right, because you know he was a real jerk, right? He gave her some trouble. But because I thought about, especially after the second book, you know, she has to do something that, even though nobody outside of her, you know, her father know exactly what she's done, well, all they know is that that person isn't there anymore, if we're not going to like give spoilers. And she's now in that person's position, but she in her mind, she knows why that person's not there. And she really, really loved that person. And she knows that those are huge shoes to fill. And when people don't understand what happened to that person, and now you've been put in that position, and you are also someone that, you know, in the first book has had to make decisions that people were like, you know what, so people don't really know the story, so they're always going to like question you, and they're also going to like compare you to this person who was like practically perfect in their eyes and try to find fault with you. Also, her being a woman, you know, in a very misogynistic atmosphere, because that's just how it is, she has to deal with that. And so while she, you know, she has to really learn to like really protect herself in that whatever she's going to feel it on the inside, and she's not going to let it show. And she can't let it show, because the moment she lets it show, then that's always what they're going to dig into and remember. And so she's got to put up that front, and it's, you know, and it's very hard for her, but she really has to push through it. And I felt like it would be something. And also, like, you know, Ghanaians, Black people, period, we're very superstitious. And so when things happen like this, we're like, oh, she's got like some bad luck. She got the bad juju on her. And like people are dying, even though she's an assassin, but people who shouldn't be dying are dying. Something's wrong. So, you know, all of those things, you know, even in her mentality, she's like, am I bad luck? Are people, you know, like dying around me and stuff like that? So that those are all of her imposter syndromes, her fears that are coming to light for this person who's supposed to be so super strong. And, you know, a lot of times people think, I'm going back to Black women, right? But that Black people, women are so fierce, and we're so strong, and all this, you know, Black girl power and all this other stuff. But yeah, we're that, but then we're also very weak and vulnerable, and we question ourselves. And I wanted to show that it's okay to have all of that, to be strong and fierce, but then also to be, you know, vulnerable and just want to be held and told everything is going to be okay. We don't have to be fierce all the time. And that's what I wanted to show with her.
Well, and I really liked how you showed that you showed her internal dialogue and her external one. And her internal dialogue was all over the place, right? But the external dialogue was no one ever really saw that. So she's still exuding this confident presence among people she's around. And so
yeah, she's trying to fake it till she makes it.
And you know, it's working, because I do know for this character, for her character in this book, she begins to own her uniqueness, like unapologetically. And she has her moments, but then other times she knows exactly what she's doing and exactly what she's saying. And so I want to talk about her relationship with Georgia. And Court calls her Peach, which I thought was super cute. But basically, she has this relationship. It has developed into like a mother role. And so what were you trying to express through exploring their relationship and their vulnerabilities and being able to really talk to each other?
Yeah, so I had to call upon thinking about like step parents and, you know, blended families and things like that. And how do you, you know, walk that line of not wanting to overstep, but like really loving this child and wanting the best for them. And Nina has always been someone who, she's not about denying, you know, she's like, whatever it is that you want to do, she believes that for everybody else, except for herself, probably. And so she's like, you know, whatever it is that you want to do, go ahead and do it. And so Georgia is like, you know, I want to learn how to fight. I want to learn how to use weapons and stuff. And Nina's like, okay. And then by this book, she's realizing, she's like, well, wait a minute. Like, with that comes responsibility. And all of these things that I have done, it's not as easy as you think to hurt someone, to kill someone. And is this what I want Georgia to know and to like go forth in her life with? And so that's when she really starts to like think as a mother, like, wait, I mean, I want her to be able to protect herself, but I don't want her to be the aggressor. I don't want her to think that this is always okay. And how do I, you know, maneuver that? And she even gets into it with Court, right? When Georgia gets into something and Court is like really, really upset with her. And he reminds her that she's not Georgia's mother. And that just destroys her, because like, that's just the one thing that someone who loves this child and y'all are in a relationship, they never want you to, you know, throw it back in their face that they're not that child's parent, especially when they're not trying to be, you know, it's not purposeful that she's like doing all that stuff. And so that really hurt her. And she has to like kind of figure out like, what is my lane with Georgia? How can I best help her? What does she need? And so those are the things that, you know, she goes over with and explores with Georgia. And very honestly says, you know, if you're going to do this thing, then it's such a responsibility and you have to understand what it is that you're doing. And it doesn't come easy and it will weigh on you. And I think that that's a real conversation that parents often have with their kids. Yeah.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because the scene that you wrote, to me, I could just see it in my head that he's like, she's my daughter. And it was not an overreaction. It was just stunned. She's stunned by this statement. And so I notice with this character, you really show how much restraint and self-control she uses. She knows what she's capable of. She's done it. And many times she's like, I'm not going to go there with you right now. And it's a very mature reaction. Is that what you're kind of going for with her growth and maturity? Because the Nina of this book is very different from the Nina of the first book, as yes. far as, you know, what she knows she can do and what she decides not to do. Is mm-hmm. that something that naturally happened, or did this occur to you in the first or second draft? Or?
I mean, it didn't even, I love the way that you said it, because I hadn't even thought about it. I was like, actually, you know what? That's true. And she is absolutely restrained. And I don't even know, because I wouldn't have been able to be like that restrained. But it also goes to, you know, the learning, her growth that, and what has she decided, you know, has learned about being responsible for your actions. She knows she can't go off the cuff because she is so experienced in these things, and she can truly hurt somebody if she allows herself to go there. And she's been there before and done that, and see what happens. And so she's very, especially after, you know, what happened in the second book, you know, she even though that was something that had to be done, you know, she still wonders if it really had to be done. And that's a question that, you know, I think her mother poses to her in this book, you know, maybe sometimes, and I think court might do it too, maybe sometimes killing isn't the, you know, the only way to fix a problem. And so that's where her restraint comes. She's trying to think about what is another way to fix it. This person's mad. I can really hurt them. I'm going to just kind of chill out. Because it's not helped me in the past. And I need to be the person who is like protecting everyone, even if they're coming at me a certain kind of way. So yeah, thank you. I'm going to have to write that down so I remember that for the next time.
Well, and another thing is, it's really interesting how this noble is her adopted father, but their relationship is so reflective of a real, like, it's, you wouldn't even have known that this was an adopted father. You would think that it was her biological father just from the mm-hmm. chemistry that they have. She mm-hmm. respects him in his, as the leader of the family, as the leader of the tribe, but she gets irritated with him. Mm-hmm. and I think it's almost like she, I saw when I was reading it that she was very, she disagreed with his decision, but she respected him to go through with it. And so how did you want their relationship to evolve in these books?
Yeah, from I think the beginning, she and he are very peculiar because the two of them more than anyone really know how to separate work from family. And they know when we're talking about work and what has to be done, we have to put all of our personal stuff aside. And I think he even tells her that, you know, in this book and things like that. And so when she deals with him and she doesn't agree with the things that he's talking about, she has to really compartmentalize and put away, okay, I'm the daughter and I'm not talking to you as dad. I'm talking to you as, you know, high council, as, you know, noble knight, the leader. And so as if I was anybody else, I would have to just go with what it is that you say. I might tell you I disagree, but I will go with what you say because you are the head. And so she has, you know, they just really are good, and they just have a really great balance and respect for each other. Even though she's so much younger than him, he respected her from the moment that he met her, because it's like game can tell game, right? And so he already knew what kind of person that she was and what she kind of needed, because he sees her in himself. And so that's how he knows how to deal with her. And she also sees him in herself, and they know how to deal with each other because they are two people who are very much alike when there's something that has to be for the good of their family, for the good of the cause of the tribe, that is what is most important. And then their family. And so they're just really, really strong about that. And so that I really loved, I enjoy their relationship every time I'm writing it. Like I'm not the one who's writing them, but it's so new and refreshing to me, and it makes me feel good. Yeah.
Well, and then what he does, and I'm trying to think how far in the book here, is he kind of pushes her to be kind of like a diplomat, an ambassador for the tribe, which is very different from her roles before. But I love the way you wrote about how she navigated those spaces of the microaggressions, the things. I mean, it's bringing a whole nother angle to her character, which I thought was pretty good. And so when you're trying to describe the microaggressions that a woman of color has to deal with in a male-dominated area, like, how did you think about, I mean, what was your process in writing about that experience?
Yeah, like, I just, you know, I called upon my own experiences. Now, my experiences weren't in a male-dominated, but it was very much, you know, in a space where, you know, people didn't look like me, you know, we didn't share the same color a lot of times. And what are some of the things that, you know, people might have done then that I was like, I just cannot believe, like, this person like lied on me about, you know, this, you know, and where did that come from? And like, I have to maintain myself so that I'm not like the angry Black woman. And how do I, you know, address this thing when someone is talking down to me as if I'm not intelligent or is trying to dismiss me? And I just called upon those personal experiences and then just kind of amplified it for whoever was, you know, whatever character was in that space. And if it was a guy, if it was, you know, a white guy, if it was, you know, Durbin, then what would he do? You know, especially since he is, you know, a white man, who has a lot of privilege, and you know, I think about like the politicians and how do they act, and so how would they, you know, behave around an underling? And I mean, you know, I've seen it myself, and so I try to like put all those things in. How would she deal with it without, you know, going to kill someone? You know, and she would have to be very restrained, and she would really have to bite back, which is what we do, and feel very frustrated and really angry because we can't get that stuff out, and so we have to channel it in different ways. But yeah, like those are the things that I was just like, she's going to have to deal with these things. And so how does she deal in this space that her dad has pushed her in? Because he has always, wanted her to be in this space, and she has always bucked against it. And so he knew he eventually was going to put her in a position where she would have to be, you know, diplomatic, and she would have to be more, you know, of a negotiator and stuff, so that she, when he finally turns things over to her and Aline, both of them can work, you know, hand in hand. But she just never knew. She just thought he was just going to let her just go on killing people. Just give me the job and I'll go do it. But he always knew. And so she had to rise to the challenge.
Well, and there's, you also explore another part outside of Nina, but connected, and it's the mission of the tribe. And you talked about the mining and the exploitation of African resources. And when you wrote that, I started thinking about the different materials that are found in Africa that are used in electric vehicles, that are used in cell phones, that are using the group itself may not be benefiting from what their resources are providing. And so what made you want to kind of go down that route and talk about that? And what was your process in researching things like that?
Yeah, so I knew that by this book, because I talked about it in the first book, how in the second I did a little bit more, you know, where I was talking about what it is that the tribe did. I thought that I need to kind of expand Nina's world so that the readers can see like something tangible that the tribe has done. I've mentioned before that, you know, they'll drop off provisions to, you know, villages and stuff, but you know, what else is it that they do when they're saying that they're trying to, like, you know, bring back resources and uplift. And this is one of them. Now, Tanzania already has a Reformation Act and things like that. So they're already doing the work, I think, in this. So in this Nina world, this Tanzania does not have one, and they're working to get it because they do realize that these villagers, and I mean, it also happens here, like when it was sharecropping, right? People who, you know, own the land, or if they don't own the land, they're the ones that are doing all the work, tilling the land, digging things and everything. And they don't know what the market value, if we're talking about Africa now, what the market is, value is in a certain gem, in a certain mineral or whatever that they find. All they know is, oh my gosh, I found this thing. Let me go and get a little bit of money so I could, you know, feed my family. And of course, they're going to be taken advantage of because everybody else knows this thing is worth whatever, but I'm going to give this person this little cut and they'll be fine with it. And I'm going to keep having this person keep digging for more and get his friends to dig for more on property that is theirs. And I'm never going to tell them that they can own it and like source it out. Like, I don't have to own this thing. And so those are the things that when I was doing my research that I uncovered, you know, I'm not uncovered, but I found for myself. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this is the kind of stuff that I'm talking about. And it infuriates me. And like, oh, all these things that come from Africa and Asia and all those places that are in our cell phones. And if you look at the percentages, the percentage is overwhelming. How many resources in our phones and our technology that you mentioned come from these countries. And yet the people who bend over backwards, who are breaking their backs, who are dying to get these resources to us are not even getting like a fifth of what they should be getting. It's the outside companies that are coming in and buying up the, you know, the property, working with the governments to take over those areas and then make those people, you know, basically pay to work on their own lands. And so those are the things that I really wanted to explore. And in my mind, how could people come to kind of like an agreement between those three parties where the villagers have more of a stake, where they're not just giving everything away without actually knowing all of the history around it and what they could possibly get. And so those are the things that I wanted to explore with this book.
Well, and I like that when Nina is seeing this, that there are a lot of subtle statements. I mean, things, you really have to be on guard for someone trying to take advantage of another person, even trying mm-hmm. to do it in a very vulnerable state. Mm-hmm. And so did you want to show, was this the book that you were thinking, this is where I'm really going to show how Nina has really grown and matured? I know we may not hear the end of her, right? She's a great character.
Right.
So, but it's, is, did this part of the series close some doors that you want to close or open some that hadn't been opened before?
Yeah, sorry to cut you off. I think it did both, right? And so it closed the door on, well, like I said earlier, she'll always have, you know, those little slips of, you know, being unsure about herself, but she's also had a realization now, I can do these things. So it's closed the door on her really believing that she's not worthy, that she can't do it, that she can't be in those spaces and make people respect her for, you know, who she is and what she can bring to the table. But it opens doors for all the different kinds of, I guess, shenanigans that she can get into now, because it doesn't only have to be missions. It's something, you know, she can now have like a different kind of, this is what I want to do now, or, you know, a different kind of goal. This is what I can show, you know, Georgia, this part and all these things. So it really, I think, will broaden her horizon. It'll help her really to become a little bit more invested in the tribe, more so in how the inner workings are happening and the people who are in there on the council, because there's always going to be a couple of bad apples. And so now she has a different perspective on how to deal with that and can help Aileen in navigating that as we go forward and really be a force, the two of them in the world, especially when the tribe becomes more public, which is what Noble has always wanted to do. And by this, and this is his goal, is I want to become public so that, you know, the world knows that there is this African force that will, you know, really stand up for these African people, and that they're going to have to deal with us and not think of us as a third world country. So it really kind of, I think, will push them, help to push them more into the limelight.
And so here's my last question for you. So one of the things that I found myself enjoying was your description of her team. Mm-hmm. So now that she's the leader of a team, now that she's the leader of a team, I saw that you started to describe all the different team members who report to her, mm-hmm. who have a place on the team, people she's trained, and just the type of loyalty that she is getting, and even just by being herself. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really cool thing to see. And so how did you come up with the different type of personalities of people who would be on the team to support Nina, the leader of this division of the tribe?
Yeah. So I just thought about, okay, well, what would she put together to know that she's got all of her bases covered? And so she needs someone, even though Billy is like a complete jerk. He's really good at his job because he worked right under Wit. And so he knows everything. And so she knows that she needs him because she still has to learn, you know, all the different, you know, parts. And she also knows that she can't have people, and she doesn't want people who are always just going to be yes, yes, yes to her. So she needs someone to kind of, you know, buck the system at her so that it helps her to become a better leader. And then we always need, like, you know, the go-to girl, which is Femi. And, you know, she's just really like about the business, and she's young. So she's like Nina when Nina was just coming up, like, I'm ready to do this and let's go. I'm like going to shoot them up. And you know, but she's also really cool and laid back. And then there's Evers, who's, you know, like the techie, and he's just so funny because, you know, even his name is funny. And he's just like, he's just a joy because he's just so like, I'm all about the tech, and he's just very literal as well, as like Nina. And so she can see, you know, a little bit of herself in all of them, actually, even in Billy, in how he has, you know, kind of just come at her because, you know, she knows that there's a resentment there. His boss is gone, and she understands that resentment from when her own family was gone, and she resents herself for his boss being gone because, you know, she loved his boss too. He was her mentor. So yeah.
Well, I think you did a great job on this series. I would encourage anyone to go to read this one, of course, independently, but also read the other two because they really give a great kind of a real great story of how this character has come to be. And for Black women, I'll say that there are so many references that you put in here that many women can identify with. And I think we don't see that in a lot of books, and we're starting to see more of it, but I really appreciate it. You're putting different cultural references that many women will be able to identify with. So congratulations on your book, Yasmin.
Thank you, Amanda.
Thanks for visiting with us today. Yasmin Ango is the author of It Ends With Night. Her book is available and on sale now. You can find out more about Yasmin at yasminango.com. Yasmin, thank you for speaking with us on Diverse Voices Book Review.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay, host and producer. The theme music is provided by Wright Productions. You can follow the show on social media. Under Facebook and Instagram, it's Diverse Voices Book Review, or Twitter under @DiverseBooksHay.